MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, joining us right now, as he does every Monday and Friday, and he will continue to do, is our good friend Ben Standig. Ben has a podcast called Last Man Standig, which is excellent. Ben covers the team, and he's going to continue to cover the team despite some bad news career-wise, but just a short, you know, interim step back because Ben is talented. But I'll let him tell you what the news is. I've known for a while when Ben and I have been talking about this, and I'm sure he has with other people as well. But he did put it out on Twitter, and go ahead. Tell everybody what's going on.
Kevin, appreciate all that. Yeah, no, I found out recently that The Athletic wasn't going to renew my contract after 6 years, so obviously a bummer. Enjoyed my time there, but, you know, I've had time to process it, so, you know, moved on, all good, going to figure out what's to come, and, you know, I mean, look, you're not guaranteed these jobs, so I was fortunate to have it for as long as I did, and, you know, the bosses get to make the decisions, just like Adam Peters and Dan Quinn do, so... Gotta respect that, and that's all I can do. But yeah, like you said, nothing. The rest of it will stay the same. Podcast keeps going. You're letting me still stay on here, so yeah.
I'm not letting you. You've earned it on, and the station wants you to stay on. Look, you and I have talked about this, but I'll net it out. Ben is really good at what he does. Over the last several years, I wouldn't have him on twice a week, especially during football season, if I didn't think he was really good. And I think he's done a phenomenal job covering the team. And I think The Athletic's losing big time by moving on from this after 6 years. You know, it's a rough business. All these businesses, you know, post-pandemic in particular, haven't been, you know, this has happened to so many in the industry. But this one, you know, when it comes down to, and I can't speak to anything, you know, with respect to their situation, but when it comes down to talent and interest level in Ben's writing on The Athletic and his covering of the team, it's second to none. And you can tell that in the responses to Ben's tweet today about his career at The Athletic coming to an end. But you will move on. You're going to continue to cover the team. You'll have a podcast, and I am assuming you'll end up writing somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple options about that. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do next, and hopefully some other opportunities will come out. But yeah, no, we'll keep it going one way or the other for sure. I got to get my thoughts out there somewhere, or I'm just going to, you know, go crazy. So yeah. We'll work out eventually. You'll be able to read my work as well as listen to it on the podcast and here. So yeah, all good. We'll figure it out.
Their loss. But we're not losing you. We're still going to have you, and you will land on your feet. You've always done that throughout your career. And by the way, have always not only landed on your feet, but gotten better with each, you know, each successive stop, you've gotten better. All right. Well, you know, we're here for you when we need you. I'm kidding. We're rooting for you big time. So
I appreciate all that, Kevin. Thank you.
Real quickly, did you see what Saquon Barkley, you know, said? These players are always into creating slights and creating reasons to be motivated, but he's like Washington didn't show any interest in me in preseason. You know, that's why they're getting the BTA, belt to backside. First of all, is there any chance, had Washington been interested in Saquon Barkley last year, that he would have come to Washington?
I mean, I can't imagine it. I mean, look, obviously Saquon Barkley is a tremendous player. He had an unbelievable season, and he definitely torched this team. It would have made zero sense at the point of what we knew, what we thought we knew about this team coming off a four-win season, to sign a running back of all positions for, you know, decent enough money. You know, that's just
all-time money.
Yeah, I mean, that's the extra, you know, piece when you like it was for the Eagles, who, a team that had never historically invested in running backs, decided that, I think they decided that they have to give Jalen Hurts a lot more help. He can't just sort of carry this thing. It would, yeah, I don't buy that he would have come to Washington, and I certainly don't think it would have made sense for Washington. Again, hindsight is, you know, all that. If we had known that Jaden Daniels would have the year that he had and everything would go the way it did, sure, having Saquon Barkley would be great, but at the point, it didn't make any sense for this team or that. And again, and from his perspective as well, like, if the choice is Philly or Washington, I don't know why he would have picked Washington, you know, considering Philly was much closer to a title contention.
Of course, and Philly offered him the largest contract in the history of the league at running back because they were so close to a title and felt like he was certainly, you know, a missing piece, if not the missing piece. Like, that's one of those, it's like, dude, keep, you know, do whatever you need to do to motivate yourself. But when you go public with something like that, you just sound stupid, because our team wasn't ever going to offer you that because we were in total recalibration mode, and you would have never even considered it. Never. I mean, zero chance you would have considered Washington last year unless they doubled the money that Philadelphia paid you. We talked about something earlier in the show. I don't know if you saw this, but Pro Football Focus basically did, with the six quarterbacks that were taken in last year's draft, 2024 draft, in the top 12, a ceiling and a floor for those quarterbacks. And I turned it into basically, you know, Jaden Daniels, after 1 year, what do we think his career comp ceiling is? And what do we think his career comp floor is? Now, they used current players, Lamar Jackson being the ceiling, Kyler Murray being the floor. I went with Steve Young as the ceiling. I've always felt like stylistically that Jaden is like Steve Young 2.0, but even more explosive, even more athletic, and by the way, taller. And I went with the floor as Michael Vick. I didn't prepare you for this, so if you need more time, I can give it to you, and we can move on to something else. But does something come to mind right away? A ceiling comp and a floor comp for Jaden Daniels?
Well, from the ceiling perspective, I swear, when you said that, the first name that came to my mind was Steve Young. You know, Randall Cunningham, there's some of that, but Randall Cunningham, ultimately, his career was not as...
That's,
you know,
right.
You know, he didn't reach the heights that we think Jaden can. And yeah, I mean, Steve Young's mobility, there's an all-time run by Steve Young, if you go, you find
it
online.
Yeah, stumbling, bumbling run, yeah.
Yeah, it was an all-timer. You know, he was incredibly accurate, you know, could get the ball down the field. You know, the Super Bowl win over the Chargers is easily one of the biggest one-sided games ever. So, no, I like that one a lot. The floor, Michael Vick's a pretty good one. You know, I don't know, maybe that's an accurate one. You know, Michael Vick obviously had some fantastic years. You know, obviously his career got interrupted by some off-the-field stuff. So, yeah, I don't think that's a bad one for sure. You know, like I said, I have to, like, sometimes I have to, like, say to myself, okay, am I going overboard with this? You know, things happen. People go backwards sometimes, or, you know, life doesn't work out the way you think, and I just can't figure out a scenario. Again, you know, knock on wood, barring injury, where this happens here because of just what he showed last year. And if it was just about the physical tools, then, you know, okay, maybe like, you know, maybe have a little more question about is it sustainable over time, but it isn't. He's, you know, he's a football nerd. He really, you know, studies this stuff, works at it all the time. And, you know, the demeanor, as we saw last year, just insanely calm and poised at all times for a guy who was his first year in the league. You'd think that's only going to get better. So yeah, I think yours are pretty accurate. I mean, like Lamar, I get it, but like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not the biggest Lamar guy. He's obviously a hell of a player, but you know, look, Jaden is already in one postseason has impressed me more than whatever Lamar has done. So in the postseason, yeah. So yeah, no, I think the ones you said are pretty good.
Yeah, you know, when you said sometimes you almost have to take a step back and say, hold on, am I getting way ahead of myself? And I do that with him all the time. But like, if we're talking about ceiling, I actually, when I threw out Steve Young, because I've always just felt like, man, Steve Young, if he plays, you know, from his mid-20s on in San Francisco with Bill Walsh and Jerry Rice and John Taylor, you know, and that whole gang, I mean, he's got more than two MVPs. He's probably got four MVPs and more Super Bowls. I've always felt like Steve Young is a top 10 quarterback of all time, and he's not always listed that way. He is occasionally. But I thought to myself, is his ceiling, Jaden's ceiling, higher than Steve Young's? Is it Patrick Mahomes? Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it, you know, is it actually, you know, I mean, this is nuts, but is it the one of the two or three greatest of all time? I mean, what we saw from him as a rookie, if I told you, yeah, in 10 years from now, he's going to be a two-time Super Bowl winner, a three-time MVP, and already a lock first ballot Hall of Famer. You wouldn't immediately push back on that.
No. I mean, you know, I think to the point of like, it is only 1 year is probably why I would say like, I can't go much higher than Steve Young as an upside right now, because to say Rodgers or Brady or any of that's just, you know, that's just a bridge too far based off of 1 year. But certainly, you know, if he keeps this up, then that's a whole other story. And by the way, on the Steve Young part, sometimes I would play this game in my head. If we did a draft of all, you know, for 32 teams, all-time players, like in the Super Bowl era at least, or maybe since like 1980, whatever, I have always thought to myself, I would let all the other people jump on quarterbacks immediately because that's what would happen, and I would take Steve Young later. That's always been my plan in a hypothetical game that will never happen. So yeah, I have high respect for Steve Young, and I think that's Steve Young's career would have been even significantly better if he hadn't been stuck behind Joe Montana for a while. So yeah, Steve Young is a pretty good one.
Yeah, I didn't know that you felt the same way. I've always felt that way about Steve Young. I've always felt like in the conversation of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, because he really didn't get started until 30, 31 years old, you know, after Montana had gone to Kansas City. You know, but still, there was a four-year period there where, he was ridiculous. And he was in that moment the greatest dual-threat quarterback of all time. And they weren't even allowing him to play dual threat football, meaning designed runs and option runs. They didn't have that. I shouldn't say design. There were quarterback draws. There were, you know, but there was no option. There was no zone read in the game back then. Imagine what a great zone read quarterback he would have been. But then as a thrower, he was great. Here were the two differences between Jaden and Steve Young, I said. Number one is Steve Young was not a tall quarterback. Like he was, I'm looking at it right now. 6'1". Yeah, he was shorter than Jaden. And number two, as explosive a runner and playmaker as he was for that time, Jaden's still much more explosive than Steve Young ever was. But in terms of throwing the football, Steve Young threw it so well. And, you know, a lot of West Coast, obviously, with Walsh, but quick release, quick read, threw with anticipation. You remember the throw that beat the Packers in the playoff game to Terrell Owens? He's a two-time MVP, first ballot Hall of Famer, and both of his MVPs were in his 30s. I mean, he also had Jerry Rice and then Terrell Owens. Like, he had some great players around him, and not Walsh for the entire time. Obviously, Seifert took over, and Mike Shanahan was his offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl year when he threw 6 touchdowns to beat the Chargers. Steve Young often gives Mike Shanahan as much credit for his career as Bill Walsh. He has said that many times. But anyway.
Yeah, no. Having Jerry Rice helps. Ricky Waters at running back, he was great.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Jaden. Last year wasn't just his first year. It was the first year of building up this team. And, you know, other than Terry McLaurin, you know, as we know, they didn't have too many established pieces, established here at least, and a lot of dart throws, and some of it worked out. So in theory, it should only get better going forward as they draft more players, add more pieces, etc.
The other thing I pointed out about Young, remember the concussion issue he had? He got concussions many, many times during an era in which, you know, roll Steve around, he'll be all right. We can put him back into the game. You know, certainly next week he can play. And towards the end of his career, even though he was making Pro Bowls, he was not the same player that he had been 3 or 4 years earlier, even though he was still playing at a ridiculously high level. So I guess Albert Breer over the weekend had another comment about the Terry McLaurin contract situation. He was answering, I guess, a mailbag question, and he said, there's a lot of work to do. I'd expect that work will pick up when the league comes back from break in a few weeks, but it is still not in a great place. So we'll see what happens. There's plenty of time to get something done. I know this is repetitive. I know that we talk about this, and we will until the deal gets done. But any change in your level of concern about a deal getting done before the season starts or before camp starts compared to the last time, because your concern level has been where mine has been, which is not that concerned.
Yeah, I don't think I've changed much. Here's what I would say as, a new report, as you said, Albert Breer said something, and I'm sure there'll be others in the next, few days of other people put out content. I think to a degree, this is right now just an echo chamber. You know, as we know, or, as I'll say, the team is not talking as far as I know. Like, there's been very little coming out about the team's perspective. It's obvious based on some of the previous tweets that people are talking to, Terry McLaurin's agent or people on McLaurin's side of things, which is, fine. But everything is still, therefore, coming from that angle. And that angle is pessimistic either for real or pessimistic because, that's how they help, get what they want out of it, right? So I don't know that anything has changed. And I think, again, it may be ultimately proved to be, they are super far apart. But I need to see a lot more before I start getting overly concerned. We may not. Everybody's also sort of on vacation. I mean, not that not that you can't negotiate from wherever you are, but, people are stepping away. And they're still, as every day goes by, I know people are getting a little more anxious. I have, random friends and others texting me all the time, what's going on? Are you going to fix this thing? And I'm always like, all right, just calm down. Let's see. So, again, we get to close to training camp and nothing's done. And then I might start getting a bit more concerned. But for now, I just think that everybody is kind of going with the same information. And, when the team starts to either say something publicly or start getting a message out privately, then we'll have a better feel for where this really is.
Yeah. All right. I want to switch subjects with you. Did you read the Rich Paul statement on LeBron picking up his player option?
I did not. I've been out of town last 20 or 30 hours, so I've kind of missed it. So what happened?
NBA free agency starts what, later today, tomorrow, something like that. So LeBron James picked up his $52.6 million player option with the Lakers for next season. Now, typically, you know, and I read that come across the crawl, I guess, I forget when, last night or whatever, and I'm like, oh, he's staying with the Lakers. And then here's the statement from his agent, manager, whatever, guru, Rich Paul. LeBron knows the Lakers are building for the future. And he also wants to compete for championships. We understand the difficulty in winning now while preparing for the future. We do want to evaluate what's best for LeBron at this stage in his life and career. He wants to make every season he has left count, and the Lakers understand that, are supportive, and want what's best for him. We are very appreciative of the partnership we've had for 8 years. By the way, I couldn't believe that he had been with the Lakers for 8 years. But I guess he did leave after the 2016 title, right? In Cleveland, he must have.
Thereafter, I heard the other day that this stint he's been longer with any team in one stint. This is the longest he's ever been.
Wow,
Cleveland more in terms of total years,
The pandemic, those years just threw a lot of things out of whack for all of us. But he finishes up, Rich Paul does, by saying we're very appreciative of the partnership that we've had for 8 years with Rob Pelinka, and consider the Lakers as a critical part of his career. What is that? If he wanted to leave, why did he pick up the player option? Why didn't he just become a free agent?
Right. Well, I mean, look, LeBron, you know, we always have the conversations about the GOAT and this, that, and the other. Like, I've always dinged LeBron because even though there's a perception of him being, you know, this great team player or whatever, that things always go sour whenever he at wherever he is. And, you know, it's about him. And I'm not saying that he's the only self-interested athlete out there, but obviously not. But with him, it's very obvious, and his agent is making it even more obvious with that kind of a statement. But by the way, last time I checked, the Lakers were the third seed last year, and they didn't get Luka Doncic until late into the season. And also, you know, look, they never had a center all year. Like, so, you know, I don't know if they're going to sign DeAndre Ayton now that he's a free agent or what they're going to do. But, do I think that the Lakers are positioned to beat the Thunder or the Rockets or if Denver gets some help? Yeah, maybe not. But at the same time, it's not like they're that far away. And, again, he just added Luka Doncic before he barely played with the guy. So you would think if your really goal is to win, like, where is he? You know, if that's your goal, well, where are you going? You're not going to OKC. You're not going to Houston. They just got Kevin Durant. Look in the East. I mean, ironically, if he went back to Cleveland again, that might be his best chance because Cleveland is arguably going to be the best team in the conference after the regular season that they had and all the other teams.
That's what injuries. I was thinking. But somebody mentioned it, I think it was Windhorse this morning, mentioned that since he picked up his player option, the Cavs would have to trade between 4 and 6 players to make that happen. I guess the Lakers could waive him, but why would they do that? Like, to me, it's like, LeBron, you just picked up the player option. You're going to be playing for us in 2025. When you picked up the player option, it was with us. It wasn't with another team. It wasn't with a promise that we're going to trade you with this player option. Who wants to trade for LeBron with a $53 million one-year deal? Seriously.
Yeah. Well. Also, I think this is like a way to shot across the bat of the Lakers to say, hey, you know, what are we doing? We got to get more help. Which, of course, I assume that they recognize that, and I don't think they're going to go into the season again with nothing at center. They tried to get Mark Williams last year, and for whatever the reason, he failed the physical, so that went away. And you know, I think they'll, you know, I presume the Lakers will figure out ways to add some help. But, yeah, look, if the goal was to really win a title, if that's the number one goal, I'm not saying anybody should give up the money. $53 million is a lot, even for a guy like LeBron who's made tons of money. But, yeah, you could have opted out and then gone ahead and, you know, I don't know what Denver's situation is exactly or Cleveland, but, like, you know, you could have figured out a deal with them where I'm sure you're making, like sort of the Aaron Rodgers situation. Like, Aaron Rodgers didn't ask for the moon. He's like, all right, give me $20 million. I'll live off of that. You know, he didn't say, give me, make me the highest paid quarterback or anything like that. So he could have gone down that route too. But again, when you're used to the world bending the knee to you, then you make these kind of plays because you just think it's going to work out. And then in fairness to him, it largely has. Don't get me started on all of that, but so I think that's that's what he's doing. It just whatever.
One thing is if he ends up moving on, watch him. He'll work Bronny into the trade to come with him, which will be annoying. I don't know. I thought it was a weird story. He has a no trade clause too, so it's like he gets to dictate everything by signing that player deal. But it's just weird to see somebody pick up a player option and then talk in terms of thanks. This has been quite a run. You guys have been great to me. Now let's figure out a trade to send me to a real contender. And remember, those standings, remember how bunched up they were at the end. They were the third seed, but they could have easily been like the seventh or the eighth seed. It was pretty close. And they were never,
They only got Luka at the end, and Luka obviously was going through whatever he was going through. It appears he's in better shape already. We'll see. So, I would think that adding Luka Doncic from the start of the season is a pretty good addition. Where are you going? And, this is, again, I think that one reason why things always seem to end badly where he is because he makes statements like this that makes it clear it's him above all. You mentioned Bronny. I feel bad for the kid, but that was just another example of it's LeBron over the team. So and we see this over and over and over again over his career. People want to pretend that's not the case, but it is, and this is just another example.
Free agency starts at 6 p.m. today. The Wizards have to sign a big man, don't they? Don't they need? Maybe they don't. The goal isn't to win, but they don't. Do they even have any sort of defensive big on the roster? I don't think so.
They added Kelly Olynyk in the Jordan Poole trade. Yeah. Kelly Olynyk's still a pretty productive big man. Not saying he's Mutombo, but he's a pretty productive guy. He's the kind of guy. In fact, if I was a team, a contending team who I would look to want to get, maybe it's at the deadline. So there's that. And, Alex Saar as well. But, their team is loaded at wing and guard. They need to get bigger bodies. At some point I'm imagining they trade one, if not two, from the group of C.J. McCollum, Marcus Smart, and Chris Middleton. I think Middleton's probably the least likely just based on his contract and injury history. But, you trade one or two of those guys, and obviously the goal is to get picks out of it. But maybe there's a way to get another big man out of it. They also have Rashawn Holmes, who, he exists and, whatever. He played in the league. But, theory, you'd like to see them get another big. But, small ball is obviously a thing. If Keyshawn George has some size, maybe they play him more at the four. You go crazy with some of these really, wingy lineups, and maybe, Koulibaly's up there. But, I would agree with you. In general, just for functional basketball, I think they need at least another big.
All right. Keep me posted, of course, and best to you. Ben's been phenomenal, and I think many of you feel the same way. The Athletic is going to miss him big time. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
Kevin, you rock. I always appreciate it. Thanks to everyone out there as well. And, we'll talk soon. See ya.
All right. Ben Standig, everybody. So remember that list of 10 reasons the Commanders would be a dumpster fire that we read through last week? The same writer wrote the same list, not the same list, but came up with a list of why the Eagles would be a dumpster fire. More on that next.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body, To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
So a few things happened yesterday. Phil Mendelson told Fox 5 that the vote on the RFK Stadium deal might not happen until mid-September. They are taking their time. And then last night at Cafe Milano in Georgetown, it was reported by our friend Eric Flack and I think others that the city council was meeting for dinner with some of the Washington Commanders ownership group, including Josh Harris. Now, yesterday, early afternoon, I had a conversation with Mayor Bowser before some of these things came out about the state of the RFK deal. I started off by, you know, asking her how many times a day does somebody come up to her or text or call and say, is this RFK football stadium thing going to get done or not?
Well, I'm getting it more now. I think that D.C. residents and sports fans alike have been excited since we made the announcement that we have an exclusive agreement with the Washington Commanders to bring our team home. And people want the council to do their deliberations, get their questions asked, and approve our deal.
You said last week, you tweeted, D.C.'s on the verge of the single largest private investment in our city's history. We've secured a partner in the Commanders who will bring $2.7 billion and kickstart the development of the rest of the RFK campus. We can't let this window of opportunity close. So, is it closing?
Well, this is how I live my life, Kevin, and it has been borne out in many, many experiences, is that sometimes in life, windows of opportunity open. And those people and those organizations who are successful figure out a way to get through the window, because you never know when it's going to close. You never know how fast it's going to close. In this case, I negotiated an exclusive agreement that runs through July 15th after many months of negotiation. And after kind of our own Hail Mary late December of last year, where we got the site in D.C.'s control after decades and decades of being under the control of the National Park Service. So we've done a lot of work. We have the right partner, and the time is now.
Right. And it's been 2 months since that, you know, exciting, you know, borderline celebratory press conference with you and Josh Harris and many, you know, former players, et cetera. And today, Chairman Mendelson told Fox that he would not call the council to a vote during their August recess, meaning that it could get pushed back to mid-September. So your thoughts on where the council is right now on the vote?
The council has a lot of daylight ahead of it in this session. They can consider my budget proposal all the way through August 4th. And we know that we're going to keep working. The team and I are in lockstep on making sure all the council members have the information that they need, and so that we can get there. What I can't do as mayor of the district is, having gotten us this opportunity and secured $2.7 billion, no sports teams are paying towards stadiums anywhere in the United States of America. But we secured a $2.7 billion investment. The team is going to be responsible for building the stadium and any overruns related to building the stadium. and we will be able to develop the rest of the 180 acres of the campus, which could include up to 5,000 or 6,000 units of housing.
Look, you've done a good job of presenting this. I think you communicate very well to begin with, just as an aside. But with respect to this issue, it's obviously been communicated well because the majority of D.C. residents recently polled are in favor of getting this done on the RFK site. That's unusual when any level of tax dollars are going towards building a new stadium. You said last week, you indicated in that post story that the team's not happy about the potential delays in voting on this. How would you describe where you are today in terms of frustration or losing patience?
Well, this is what I know. And, you know, I served almost 8 years on the council of the district. I chaired the council's economic development committee. I delivered the legislation that approved the Audi Field. So I know how the legislative process works. I know the tools that are at the council's disposal. And I think that everybody should be treating this urgently. Nobody should have the kind of nonchalance that I've heard from some that, oh, well, what's a month, what's 2 months, what's 3 months? I think it introduces a level of uncertainty and risk that's intolerable for most business organizations. And the political uncertainty is also real. So that's why it's important that once everybody has what they need and the council has done its own study, which I understand will be delivered in July, actually this week, July 3rd, I was told they would have a draft. They scheduled a hearing. We think they should advance that hearing to no later than July 21st. And I know a lot of people are interested to testify. And then that will line them up for a vote. Now, a lot of people have spoken very positively about the stadium and getting there. So I think everybody just needs to buckle down, work day and night if necessary to get any issues ironed out, and vote.
What you just said, buckle down, work day and night. You know, I hear the urgency in your voice. I would imagine that this is what Josh Harris and Mark Ein and Mitchell Rails and the key people with the team, that they are urging as well, that it's roll up the sleeves time and get it done. Have they expressed that to you?
Listen, these folks have been at the table with us really since last June, working on a great plan. We brought in the world's best in terms of finance and also stadium development, and that's how we got to the deal that we got to. And so I won't speak for the team. I do know that I have the only exclusive agreement right now. And I don't want to lose it. And no one should want to give that up.
What are the reasons right now? Net it out as to why it's taking the council so long.
Well, I want to be fair to council members. It's a big deal. And all stadium projects have their, you know, some level of back and forth. So I get that. They're considering my budget. I get that. But all budgets are handled in 70 days. That's what the statute allows. And this is a budget item. And so the council has the ability to consider it as such. And like I said, I think they read the tea leaves. They see that D.C. residents are supportive. They understand if nothing happens here, that site may not be developed for decades because we don't have another big investor. We don't have another employer or company saying, hey, D.C., here's $2.7 billion. Why don't you get started at RFK? We have the right partner who's bringing these dollars to the table and guarantees us activity, jobs, and economic activity at that site in 2030. Now, everything that the council does to delay it puts at risk some big events. The Women's World Cup is coming, and if we don't have a stadium on the way, they're going to pass us by, just like the World Cup has passed us by, that's coming to the U.S. So time does matter in terms of being able to deliver and the economic development that comes with the stadium being open. But I think the time also matters in terms of introducing more risk, political risk, economic risk, financial risk, you name it. More risk is the only thing that comes out of a delay.
You said 70 days to consider, you know, a budget item, which this is. Where are we? About 60 days since you guys signed the term sheet with the team?
August 4th, I think, is the 70th day
okay.
of the budget cycle.
Mayor, what are the issues with the council? What part or parts of the deal that you cut with the team back in April do you think they want tweaked or even changed entirely?
Well, they won't tell me. I mean, literally, they won't tell me. So I think they gave more to the Washington Post last week than they've told me or the team. And so that's what I'm talking about when I say let's all get in a room, hammer it out, and come up with if there are terms that make sense. Now, I will say, like, we didn't leave a lot. I don't think we left anything on the table. Like, we negotiated hard. We got $2.7 billion, a roofed stadium that's going to generate tons of economic activity. So I think we've always expected that the council members would negotiate a community benefits package. With having spoken to the community and focused on getting D.C. residents employed, having small businesses have opportunities on the site, focus on youth sports. By the way, our deal includes building an indoor sportsplex
right.
that would be for D.C. And so I think that it's always been contemplated that that community benefits package would be negotiated at the council, at the council's process. And I'm looking forward to that being delivered at the same time.
The negotiation exclusivity runs through July 15th. Is that correct?
Yes.
Are you concerned that post July 15th, the team will negotiate with, say, Maryland, as an example?
Listen, I think the team wants to be at RFK. We want them to be at RFK, but they do business. They don't do politics. And so I think that we have an agreement. I stand by our agreement, and we both stand side by side in our willingness to answer all the council's questions and get to a yes this summer. And that's important. Now, I've been around this long enough to know, and you know what we went through last year with
yep.
our sports teams. And so that's why having a period of exclusivity was, like, I insisted that that be a part of the term sheet. That's why I protected so vigorously, because I was that other jurisdiction. Okay. I was that other jurisdiction when I see a deal that wasn't solid. Our deal is solid. We have a signed term sheet. That wasn't the case in the Virginia deal, but, I know how this can go. And so I think we all need to treat that period of exclusivity with the seriousness that it deserves.
All right, two more, because I'm adding this one. I'm just curious, how much revenue a 2031 Women's World Cup would generate for the city?
Oh, you know, I do. We have kind of a back of the envelope, and I think we estimated a delay. I don't want to guess. I'll get somebody to get it back to you.
Okay.
But it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars of delay of economic activity.
All right. Last one, and this is sort of, you know, the way I do things on radio. Level of concern. 5, you're really concerned about this deal getting done. 0, you've got zero concern. Our football team's going to be playing in a brand new stadium on the RFK site by the year 2030. Where are you today?
that's a good question. Listen, I'm concerned right now that everybody buckle down and get to work. I'm not concerned about our deal. Our deal is solid. It pays off for D.C. And at the end of the day, I think everybody wants the same thing. So I will put my level of concern, because, you know, when you're a big city mayor, you're concerned about everything. I'll put it at a 4.
Okay. Well, that's one away from very concerned, but we'll leave it at that. Bring it across the finish line. I know you've done, you know, most of what you need to do, and this rests probably a lot with the council at this point. But thanks for the time, as always. Yep. Hope you're well.
Thank you. We're going to get it done. Have a good one.
That was Mayor Bowser, a conversation I had yesterday with her. Again, last night there were reports of a dinner meeting between ownership, football team ownership, and some of the city council. We'll see if anything comes out of that. I am curious, because I know there are a lot of smart people, or at least some smart people listening to this show, who may even have some insight as to how these things get done. We haven't had anything like this really since the baseball stadium, and that barely passed the city council back in 2006 or whatever year that was, 2005. But where do you think this is? The mayor at the very end expressed a level of 4 on a concern scale of 0 to 5, 5 being very concerned, 0 being zero concern over this deal getting done. I thought Mendelsohn's statement to Fox 5 yesterday was what she talked about. I think you could hear in her voice and in what she said multiple times that there is a sense of urgency that she and the team wished the council had, and maybe the council has very good reasons for not being urgent, or maybe they believe they're being urgent, and perhaps they are. But, you know, locking yourself in a room for day and night, as she talked about, until you've got all of the information and you are ready to vote, seems to be a path they might consider traveling long before September, because the team does want to make a $2.7 billion investment in the city, and they want to open this stadium in 2030, and they want access to some of the big events that will be coming right around then, 2031, the Women's World Cup. Remember, that's not a one-day event either. That is a multi-week event with several games, and it is a tremendous economic windfall for cities that host it. I would imagine the Men's World Cup is even, you know, exponentially higher, but the Women's World Cup is a big event as well, and this is really, comparatively to a lot of U.S. cities, a strong soccer market. So if you want to weigh in and you've got strong thoughts and maybe even some experienced thoughts on this, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I still think it gets done. It gets done in a manner in which the team is not forced to, you know, threaten going back to Maryland or Virginia or anywhere else to have conversations. The team's made it very clear they want to be in D.C. The deal with the city appears to be a good one for the team as well. So I think that ultimately everybody gets it together here over the next, say, month, and it gets voted on, and they get 7 votes. And we're, you know, on a path, and the process begins towards building not just a stadium, but everything that will go up around it and on that campus sometime later this year. 301-230-0980 if you'd like to weigh in on anything that the mayor said or anything regarding this situation. I'd be happy to hear what you have to say. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980 and TheTeam980.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the pitch, hit, and run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Corn to the bottom of the screen. Second and goal, 10 seconds. Daniels fires, end zone, touchdown! Jamison Crowder, preposterous! And the lead with seconds remaining.
Yeah, that was the masterpiece last year, the comeback against Philadelphia. And it was, you know, a masterpiece, as I've said before, that had imperfections because he threw a bad interception in the fourth quarter. But to overcome five turnovers against a team on a 10-game winning streak with clearly in that moment the best defense in the NFL to score 36 points and beat them 36-33. He was just amazing. Although, truth be told, the next game against Atlanta, what he did in that second half and in that overtime almost exceeded it. Jaden Daniels had, by some, you know, metrics, some measurements, more than most, the greatest rookie season by a quarterback in NFL history. Pro Football Reference has something they call approximate value. It's an AV number that's assigned to every player in every player's season. It's an attempt to attach a single number to every player's season since 1960 based on a lot of different criteria. And Jaden's last year, his AV was 20. That's first out of 132 rookie quarterbacks since 1960 that played and started as a rookie. Second on that list is Cam Newton, whose 2011 season he had a 19. But you're talking about, you know, Jaden Daniels along with Newton, Russ Wilson, Dak Prescott, RG3. Those are really among the greatest rookie seasons of all time. C.J. Stroud had an excellent rookie season as well. We know that he was just the sixth rookie quarterback in NFL history to lead his team to a conference championship game. But the others, to be fair, Sean King in 1999, Ben Roethlisberger in 2004, Flacco in 2008, Sanchez in 2009, and Brock Purdy in 2022, were leading great all-around teams that were, for the most part, led by their defense. You know, the Tampa team, the Pittsburgh team, the Flacco-Baltimore team in 08. Not the 2012 team that Flacco was legitimately outstanding in the postseason and their defense wasn't as good. Sanchez, clearly a defensive-dominated team. And Brock Purdy had an unbelievable run game and defense in 2022. Jaden, out of the quarterbacks that led teams or were quarterback rookie quarterbacks on teams that made championship games, is the only one that strapped the team to his back and took it to a championship game. So, you know, their passer rating numbers were Jaden's all-time, AV numbers, you know, rookie quarterback led, you know, deep runs into the postseason. It's the greatest rookie season ever. And I'm asking the question based on a couple of emails, including this one from Bert, who said, so let me get this straight. After one season, you have concluded that Jaden is better than Lamar and Mahomes, or is their equivalent? Let the kid actually win something before we crown him. Lamar's the perfect example of how hard it is to win the Lombardi. You can beat a two-time MVP and still have nothing to show for it. This off of the conversation of ceiling and floor for Jaden the other day that we had. So have we crowned him too early? You know, is one season enough to feel like we've seen enough? This is who he's going to be. He's going to be everything he was as a rookie and even better as the surrounding cast improves, as he matures, although he played like a pretty mature quarterback last year. I think it is early 99 times out of 100, but I don't know that it is in this case. I think still the only thing that concerns me about Jaden Daniels is the exact same thing that concerned me last year. And that is his frame one in which it'll hold up and he'll be available for 15, 16, 17 games a year consistently throughout his career? We saw him get hurt in a game last year. Saw him get hurt twice in a game last year, but ended up missing the majority of the game against Carolina, the game in which Marcus Mariota came in and played extremely well. I don't think we have. I know we have, but I think this is the exception to the rule, so I'm going to continue to do it. 301-230-0980. Have we crowned him too early? Max, what do you say?
So there's a lot. I'm old enough to remember Patrick Mahomes' rookie year and the feeling I got when I watched him do the things that he did on the field. And it was
You mean year two? It was his second year.
Yeah, correct.
The first year that he played.
His breakout year, yes.
Yes.
So, and just by watching him, I got a lot of those same feelings when I watched Jaden, because there's very few guys who play with the IQ that he does, with the movement that he does, with just the speed in general that he does. And it's like every time throughout the season we got into like a fourth and short situation or something like that, he bailed this team out on like third and 15, fourth and two, anywhere on the field. He was able to get them out of it. So it's... I won't say it's too early to crown him as like one of the top quarterbacks, but I do need to see more in order to like dry the cement. You know what I mean?
I think that's a really, really good way to kind of view Jaden. And people are going to say, well, that's Mahomes. Okay. Well, that first year of him starting, not his rookie year, as we know. By the way, I've said this a million times. I think if Andy Reid had pulled Alex Smith and put Mahomes in when they were struggling at one point in that season in 2017, I think Mahomes would have been great as a rookie. I don't think he needed to sit the entire year, but no one will ever know. But the year two that he had, you know, 50 touchdown passes, 12 interceptions, 5,000 yards, the MVP, let's also not forget, they got to the AFC Championship game and lost that game. They lost to the Patriots at home in overtime, 37-31, I think it was. Now, he threw for many more yards. He threw for a lot more touchdowns that particular season. His rush yards, though, weren't anywhere near.
He also had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce on his team, too. So that helped quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, Jaden had, you know, over, you know, 860-something yards rushing. So 600 more yards rushing than Mahomes did and was much more of a factor as a dual-threat quarterback. But I like that because in Kansas City, you could have easily, after that season, said, have we crowned him too early? The problem, the one difference is that season was one of the greatest seasons a quarterback's ever played, not as a rookie, but as a quarterback at any point in their career. So there is that. But sure. I like that because I guarantee you there were people that were saying, well, just hold on here. It's just one year. And then there were others that were saying, yeah, but if you watch that year and you saw what he did And you saw what he did in the clutch during those games.
It's the eye test, man.
Yeah.
There's no replacing it.
All right. Let's get to the phone lines. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Have we crowned Jaden Daniels too quickly, too early? Let's start with our guy Chad in Nashville. Chad, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin.
Chad,
so what's going to happen is they're going to do a documentary on the Washington Redskins and the Commanders. And it is going to go through 25 years, 30 years of the transition of this team and the downfall and the absolute just travesty of losing this franchise. Not losing, but you know what I'm talking about. And then here comes Jaden Daniels. That documentary, 75% of it, the filler of the whole freaking documentary will be nothing but Jaden Daniels. And here's why. What he did last year, I don't think we will see probably again for a while, even if you look at quarterbacks coming out. I guarantee you. Jay Gruden, you've had Jay Gruden on. You've had Shanahan on. And they have talked about things that you can't fake, things that you can't get. You can maybe get a little better, but you'll never be elite at. He showed last year, check mark, check mark, check mark, check mark.
Yeah.
He can do it. He can be elite doing it, and he's got the attitude to be able to sustain it. And that's why I was saying, man, I got to see. It's that part of that deep part. We got to get out of that mode of kind of a fear of things are going to go wrong. And as of after the season, a couple months, I don't know if you can convince me that we're not looking at the second coming of a Tom Brady or the next Patrick Mahomes. That you just can't convince me now that we're not. And to me, as a Redskins fan, saying that, for us to be able to say that, is insanity. And to even Tommy on your podcast, how many times has he said, this magic isn't fake. This magic's real. I think it's real.
I do. But it doesn't mean – both things can be true, that what we saw was real, but we've also crowned him too early. Because just 1 year. I'm with you, though. You know how I feel. I feel like what I watched last year was borderline flawless. Now, you know, the coaches will tell you, you know, the footwork can improve or this can improve a little bit. But even they're stretching and reaching to find things that he didn't do well. He checked every box as a rookie.
Yep.
He can throw it short, quick game. He can throw it. Medium, he can throw it. Remember all the concerns about he can't throw the ball over the middle. You know, he takes too many sacks, his pressure to sack percentage. He checked all of the boxes, the deep ball, from the pocket, on the move, creating, you know, off schedule, as a runner, designed runner, option runner, scrambler, in the clutch. Team needs him to deliver on a big drive late in the game. In games in which if you lose, you go home. He checked every box. Now, he was given the opportunity to check every box because they won 12 games, which he was largely responsible for. So you got into some of those big games. That's the other thing that came out of last year. And it's going to pay off in a big way. Is
with a bad defense.
These guys
too,
played Kevin. Massive games. Massive games.
Yeah, with a bad defense. And he every other quarterback that's gone to an NFC championship game has had a top defense. Look at name those quarterbacks. They weren't great. Thanks for taking my call,
Chad. Appreciate it. You know, I've tried to think, like, what could go wrong in this upcoming season? Well, they're clearly playing, at least on paper right now, a much tougher schedule. Teams that are much better offensively than the teams they played last year. And that's very important because the defense struggled last year against average to less than average offensive football teams. And if you end up not getting off the field and giving up too many points, and now the pressure, just like it was last year, on Jaden to put up 30-plus, 28-plus, to drive him down the field late, etc., will that hold up against better quarterbacks, better teams? We'll see. But in terms of the only thing I can come up with that could go wrong is – either he gets hurt or legitimately the supporting cast up front skill positions just isn't anywhere near good enough. And it wasn't great last year. And it looks better this year, just along the offensive line. It looks better this year. But what if, you know, Tunsil got hurt? What if, you know, Biotish, you know, remember what happened when Biotish had a game off? What if Terry, you know, doesn't get there until late and isn't the same player? What if Debo is out of shape? What if the running backs really were the problem last year? Even if that's the case, I still think that he and Kingsbury would scheme up enough offense and he would be productive enough for the team to be competitive. Let's go to Kendall. Kendall, thanks for holding. Have we crowned Jaden Daniels too quickly?
Hey, what's up, Kevin? In my eyes, no, man. To get, everybody's made some great points. I'll add that outside of every box that he's checked, outside of every extraordinary thing that he's done, he's made people better. So the kid is one of one, man. He's one of one. And is he going to be less prepared this year than the coming years than he's been? No. Is he going to be less accurate? No. He's going to only get better. Now, will he have some areas where team scheme different things that he has to, but he's so prepared and he has such a great work ethic and attitude that in my eyes, I have him clearly at number five in the league, but I'm not taking any quarterback, Mahomes included, over Jaden. I want Jaden, and I would dare say maybe not Kansas City, but Baltimore, Buffalo, and Cincinnati. If they had an opportunity to get just a one-for-one swap, they'd consider it if it was serious. It was because the kid is that good, man. So, I just can't wait to see what he does in the future.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is where, like, you know, you have to take a step back and say, well, maybe we aren't crowning him too early, because if you took every team in the league right now, Buffalo wouldn't swap, Kansas City wouldn't swap. I don't think Cincinnati would swap. Baltimore, Lamar for Jaden, they probably wouldn't swap. And then who? I mean, you're going to tell me the Eagles wouldn't swap Jalen Hurts for Jaden Daniels? The Cowboys, the Giants, the Goff is older. Minnesota doesn't know with McCarthy. I mean, Jordan Love, come on. I mean, I think he's a really good quarterback. Baker Mayfield, you're not going to swap for Jaden Daniels? Stafford at his age, you're not going to swap with Jaden Daniels? Purdy, Murray, you know, Herbert, I don't know. I think the Chargers, given what he's done in big games versus what Jaden's done in big games, I think you'd swap, if you're a Chargers fan, your quarterback for Jaden. Denver, Knicks, definitely. Trevor Lawrence, sure. Who are we forgetting? Anybody? Drake May? I think so. I think there are four teams for sure that probably would say thanks, but no thanks. But they actually might consider it. Kansas City wouldn't. Buffalo wouldn't. Baltimore and Cincinnati might call a meeting to discuss it, but probably would stick with who they have. That tells you something. And I don't think that's crazy to say that basically of the other 31 teams, 27 would swap their quarterback for Jaden Daniels right now. Let's go to our guy, Junkyard Dog. Junkyard Dog, have we crowned Jaden Daniels too quickly? JYD, you there?
It's a 50-50 split. Simply because if we look at what he's done and what he can do with the proper things around him, yes, he can do it. He hasn't been crowned too soon, but we also have the factor that sometimes quarterbacks do regress some in their second year. It doesn't mean that they're bad quarterbacks or that they won't be great continue to be great quarterbacks. But sometimes you see a regression simply because are they really focusing or are they seeing what they really actually seeing, something new from defensive coordinators out there on the field?
Yep.
Then we also have to look at also this team. I know everybody loves the general manager, but to me, he's a little too slow for me. Because I don't think he's really looking at a sense of urgency of really putting the pieces around a quarterback that is on a quarterback-friendly deal, and then I'll let you go.
Thanks, JYD. Well, they did invest in one of the best pass-blocking left tackles in the game with multiple draft choices and probably, this time next year, a commitment to pay him or less than a year away from a commitment to extend him. So, they went out and got Deebo Samuel. I think they're trying offensively to add pieces around him for sure. I think defensively, that's where we'll find out. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Have we crowned Jaden Daniels too early? G, what's up?
Nah, we ain't crowned him. And what are we crowning him? Like, we are knowing that he's the best quarterback we done had in years because all the dudes that we done had,
many of us are, and I am, as already a top five quarterback in the league.
No, because
elite.
And that's what he did. That's what he did last year.
Yeah, I understand that, but you asked, how are we crowning him? That would be an example of how we're crowning him. We've already called him after one season among the elite quarterbacks in the league. He's in that top tier of quarterbacks after one season.
And that goes back to our conversation last week, because our eye test showed us that. He put it out there on the field. He threw for 3,500. You know what I'm saying? 100 passing rating, man. Went to the conference championship as a rookie. Like, we know what we seeing. Like, we seen Kobe as a rookie. He only averaged seven points a game, but we saw the greatness and flashes in that type of season. He won the dunk contest, had the star power. We saw that. But Jaden Daniels did much more than what Kobe did in his rookie year. So, no, we're not crowning him, like, as the greatest quarterback. But my eye test definitely shows me that he's a top five, top seven best quarterback in the league after one year. Like, that's not far-fetched, man. We done watched enough football to see the talent and what he brings to the table.
I agree with you, but part of the crowning, G, is also the conversation that we had the other day talking about who this guy is going to end up being, the ceiling. And people were saying he's Mahomes. He's might be the GOAT when he's done. I threw out Steve Young as the ceiling comp, first ballot Hall of Famer. So that's part of it, too. Yeah. So, look, people have gotten carried away. I don't want to describe it as carried away. We have talked glowingly about this player like we've never talked about a player. I don't think we talked about RG3 this way, even though RG3 had a special year.
That's the thing.
We knew he had some flaws in his game.
We done lived through the Dookie for years. So I'm not letting Bert or nobody tell me not to be super excited off what I've seen, because I done watched doo-doo for the last few years. So I don't care if he's saying I'm crowning him too early. No, I'm excited because he shows me that the ceiling definitely could be Mahomes with multiple rings. And also my floor, because I ain't calling him, was Randall Cunningham, because Randall was a killer for years.
Yeah.
So I'm comfortable at that position. And we're not crowning him too early, Bert.
All right. Those of you who are on hold, stay there. Robert, Keith, Mike, Pauly, we've got a line open. Have we crowned Jaden Daniels a bit too early, just after one season? Phone lines open. 301-230-0980. Mark Ein next hour. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Audacy podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.